Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the attorneys. We are with the Herzog Law Firm, conveniently located over at Corporate Woods outside of just off of I-90 and Albany Shaker Road. We also have offices in Saratoga Springs, New York, Kingston, New York, and shortly we'll be opening our new office in Clifton Park.
All right, Clifton Park. It's going to be up and running hopefully by the middle of the month. That's my goal.
Yeah, we got to move some furniture around and, you know, we got to get some things, get it set up. But those of you in the southern Saratoga and even northern, you know, you're free to meet us at any of those offices. So that's pretty new and exciting. We also have welcome to our firm on January 1st, Dan
Glasser.
The Dans. We now have two Dans. We do. We have two. Dan Glasser's a real estate attorney. He is a real estate lawyer, and he is going to be augmenting our real estate practice, which many of you are not probably even aware that we do. We actually have a lot of real estate closings that we handle during the course of a year, because when you are involved in estate planning and estate administration, people tend to, particularly as they age, they change their housing arrangements very often. They may sell a house, they may move into a smaller house or into an apartment or senior living center. So that throws off a lot of real estate closing. So Dan is going to be handling all our real estate stuff. So we want to welcome Dan to the firm as well. And this morning, we would love to have your calls here at Magic 590 AM 100.5 FM at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you have a question about estate planning, wills, trusts, healthcare proxies, powers of attorney, beneficiaries, estate administration, what happens when somebody, what do you have to do when somebody passes away? Debbie and I are here for the next hour to talk to you and hopefully give you some interesting information. There are a whole bunch of new things that are starting, because it is, by the way, Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year.
Did you have a wild and crazy New Year's Eve, Debbie?
No, definitely not wild and crazy.
Me either.
We just had, you know, we had dinner with some friends, and we played some games, and I was very disappointed. I didn't win any of the games, so I'm starting.
These games must not have occurred at a casino, because
No.
You got better,
friends
you
house.
Got better luck there.
There, yeah. Maybe I should do that next year. I don't know.
Well.
Note to self. Okay. But no. But, you know, it was fun games. I did want to mention, when you're talking about the new year, I had a couple of people in the office give me articles that they thought would be important for us to discuss on the radio.
Okay.
And one of them is, make sure to enter the full year when filling out legal documents in 2020.
So, in fact, Ben was talking about, I heard that on, what was that, earlier newscast?
I did. I had it at 7:30 this morning. So, yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah. It's going around now,
so
that you should fill it out. Yeah,
tell us about that. Because that's a possible new scam, right?
Right. Well, think about it. Whenever you, last year, when you wrote the date, so you'd write 12/31/19, right?
Sure.
And people wouldn't backdate anything, right? Because 19 was the end of the year. But now, if you put 1/4/20...
Right.
People could backdate it. They could put like 19 or 18 or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
And there's going to probably be some scams on that. And plus, when you're entering stuff into computers and stuff like that, you need to make sure that you put the full date in too.
Right. So you got to, for the year, you want to use all four digits.
Right.
Right. You do have to, you know, when you order anything online, you put your, you know, whatever date or whatever, you're like your birth date or something. It's like 09, 14, 19, use all four of the digits. So, yeah, remember to do that, folks, because we're all into shortcuts and abbreviations.
Well, it would be invalid. Think about it. If somebody put the end of the date on there, it would be invalid. Let's just say you signed it this year, and they wanted to say, oh, well, you signed this last year. They could just put a 19 on it.
Right. You could backdate a check. You could backdate a, you know, whatever. A document?
A document, which
would
not be good. Yeah.
Well, I mean, besides being fraudulent, I mean, it's, you know, we want to catch those things, because there are scam artists out there looking to scam people. So good advice.
Yeah, that's, and the other article that they gave me is, it's a called, what is it, a solo ager. Are you a solo ager?
I have no idea. What is one?
As an older person without a partner or surviving children, it's a growing group. In 2000, 16% of Americans 85 and older had no living offspring. Mm-hmm. A recent SeniorCare.com study found that 78% of solo agers had no one to help them with bills or finances.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting because I do have a lot of clients that come in, and when we sit down with them, they're like, well, I need to do documents. Okay, fine. Who's going to be your executor?
I don't know.
I don't know. My sister? Well, how old's your sister? Well, she's 10 years older than me.
She's 82. Yeah. You know?
So, well, what about nieces and nephews? Oh, no. Mm-mm.
None of them.
No. And then it's usually like, well, what about you? And I'm like, no, we don't generally do that. So
it's a serious problem.
There's only two states. Apparently, there's only two states that have professional fiduciaries. New York's not one of them. So they said that they license private fiduciaries are California and Arizona. So those are the only two states where you can get a fiduciary that's licensed and bonded.
And are these like people as opposed to institutions who have trust powers? And
yeah. So it says that, you know, the people are bonded. Says they typically charge $100 to $150 an hour for their services. And it says they're independent, bonded individual who's obligated to act for the benefit of his or her client. And then it says fiduciaries can exercise powers of attorney for finance. They can serve as executors for an estate. And they can be bill payers or guardians.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. I mean, really, because we run into this increasingly more with the aging population and with the boomers, the baby boomers coming along. I mean, it's astonishing. In about 10 years, by 2030, there's going to be an explosion of old people. And
solo agers.
And solo agers. And many of them are widows or children. Yeah, exactly. So maybe we will move toward that. What are the two states that have professional?
California and Arizona.
Yeah, well, they're a little more forward-thinking than New York. But and someone like that would be an excellent choice. Because, you know, the critical thing here is carrying out your wishes, but also the bonding aspect of it is very important. A bond, for those of you who don't know, is basically an insurance policy. So the person who's going to be the executor or the trustee, they got to buy a fidelity bond that ensures that if they steal money from the estate or they waste it or they act irresponsibly, the insurance company will pay up and make the people who are the beneficiaries whole. And you will find this when we administer estates. This is one of the reasons people have a will instead of dying without a will. Because the will, every will that we've ever usually says, my executor is not required to furnish a bond. Okay, then the court doesn't require a bond. In an administration proceeding, there is no will. There is no request. And so unless the administrator is probably the sole beneficiary of the estate, the court's going to make them purchase an insurance bond, right?
Right, and they're expensive.
Well, this is a bond that ensures that if they screw up, there's some money behind them to make the beneficiaries whole. Very important. So
we'd love for you to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. We actually have seminars that are going to be at the end of the month. They're going to be on basic estate planning, going over wills, trusts, powers of attorney, healthcare proxies, a little bit of Medicaid planning. Those are going to be Tuesday, January 21st, 2020 at 2 in the afternoon. And that's the Hampton Inn, Clifton Park. We've got Wednesday, January 22nd at 2 in the afternoon at the Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Ave in Albany. Thursday, January 23rd at 10 in the morning at the Courtyard by Marriott Residence Inn on Wolf Road in Albany. Thursday, January 23rd at 2 in the afternoon at the Courtyard by Marriott on Mohawk Harbor. That's the one that's over next to the Rivers Casino. Guess who's doing that one? Anyway.
I'm surprised that we got three courtyards. I'm surprised that one isn't at the casino in town. I know. If you want to talk to Debbie after the seminar, just cruise on.
You'll
over
find me
to
at the slot machine. Yeah. Anyway.
Wherever the slots are.
And then Thursday, January 30th at 2 in the afternoon, that's the Holiday Inn Express in Kingston on Ulster Ave in Lake Katrine.
Right. Okay. Okay, our first call is online. Shelly in Clifton Park. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good morning.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. You guys are up and at them early.
You bet.
So my question is, how would I know if an ex-boyfriend removed me as trustee of his trust because last I knew I was?
Well, it's hard to say. Do you have unless you have a copy of the trust? Our trusts, for instance, the ones we prepare in our firm, provide that in order to complete the removal of a trustee, you actually have to notify the old trustee that they've been replaced by somebody else.
Oh,
okay? Now, now, not all trusts say that, however. All right? And so it may be difficult to find that out. But normally, if the person, the old boyfriend, whoever it was, removed you, they would want you to know about it so you didn't go ahead and continue to act like you were still the trustee of their trust if they selected somebody else.
Yeah.
Do you have a copy of the trust?
I do.
Well, read through it and see if it says...
Usually it's 3 days' notice, they have to give notice.
First of all, it has to give them... Is this a revocable trust? Or do you know what kind of a trust it is?
It was a... pour over Medicaid trust.
So. Oh, okay. So you're the trustee.
Yeah.
Do you know, did our law firm prepare it?
It did. You did.
Oh, well then, it provides that you can be removed on 3 days' notice. I'm pretty sure it does.
Okay. But now, I would be notified of that.
Well, yeah, although...
What happens sometimes...
Sometimes they don't give the notice.
Sometimes the person that's the grantor that set up the trust... If they've got children or somebody that they really don't want to have to explain why they removed them, a lot of times they'll say, just give me the letter and I'll mail it, because we prepare a letter that says, you know, hey, by the way, you've been replaced as trustee. And if they want to mail it, we make a note in the file that says, okay, we gave them the letter and they're going to mail it. And sometimes they don't.
Gotcha. All right. I just thought that would be good question to start the new year.
Oh, yeah. It is a good question. I mean, among other things, I mean, if the trust... Do you know if this trust filed tax returns? Because if it had income...
I don't think that trust did.
Okay.
No.
Well, if it didn't have income, but if, for instance, if it had income from interest or dividends or something like that, you'd have to sign the tax return every year.
Yeah, so, you'd be responsible.
You know, so... You might... I mean, among other things, I would get, you know... You probably don't want to be the trustee of this trust anymore, or do you? I don't want to get too personal here.
Right. It's so funny.
So you could also resign as trustee if you don't want to be the trustee anymore. Even if he has removed you, you could resign.
That's true. And the next person would step up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Very good.
All right. Hey, thanks for listening. That's a great question.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, Shelly. Have a great weekend.
Take
All
care.
Right, you too.
Bye-bye.
That's 518-476-5900 if you want to be... Get in line to be our callers. We seem to have a good group here. Sue in Albany is up next. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning. Now, my question is about the Handstar. During the year, last year, there was talk about it was going to be different this year.
The what? What was going to be different?
Handstar.
The Handstar.
Oh, that, well, it is different.
We haven't heard anything more about it.
Well, they didn't tell anybody about it. The state didn't tell anybody about it, but... Have you been signed up for the STAR for a long time?
Yes.
Okay, so if you didn't change over to the new system, you will still get the STAR relief, but it's not going to go up as much as it used to. You had to basically switch over, I believe, to... How do they do it now? They don't send you the check. You get a tax credit on your income taxes or something? I think that's how it works.
You mean on your, well...
What we got now is that when we got our taxes, it was less money. They took it off
Right.
Your tax bill.
But they said it wasn't going to be that way now.
Well, wasn't it that if you set it up, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Harriet, like originally it was if you set it up so that they got the credit on the tax bill, then it wasn't going to increase every year. But if you signed up to get the check, then you were going to get the increase every year?
Well, the difference was in the new system, I think you have to pay the full tax.
Right.
Without the STAR relief, and then you get it back later.
Yeah, check back, yeah.
Under the old system, you only pay the school district the net amount, not the full amount.
So we have to sign up with
yeah,
the
you
state,
do. You
or,
have,
I mean, they, yeah. It just went quiet. It was in the paper and everything, and you people talked about it too, I
right.
think. And then now we haven't heard anything. Usually around now, I'll get a piece of paper from the assessor's office to sign right. up, you know, for and then send it back in.
See, but it's now it's done. It's done now through the state tax department. Rather than the assessor's office.
So it's going to go through the state.
Yeah, so the new people who are buying homes now have to sign up for the STAR program by going on the state tax department's website and enrolling. You don't do it through the school district anymore. But my understanding was people who were already signed up through the school district and the tax assessor's office at your local municipality could continue that, all right?
Right.
But you weren't going to, in other words, every year the STAR amount goes up, but if you're on the old program, I don't think it goes up. I think it's fixed. Under the new program, it goes up every year. But so there's some loss of credit there. I'll tell you what, why don't
I'm going to call the assessor's office.
Well, they'll be able to tell you. And let me find out this week. Let's find out this week exactly what the rules are and everything, because you see, March 1st, what is it, January 4th?
March
1st,
yeah.
March 1st is...
We have to sign that piece of paper and send it back to the assessor's office by March 1st.
Right. In order to get next year's school tax STAR relief, you got to sign up by this March 1st. Otherwise, you're not going to get it, okay? So let's find out, let everybody know, you know, in the next week or two what you got to do so you do it right, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Cool. Thanks for listening.
Okay, bye.
Russell in Kingston. Hey, Russell.
Good morning, Russell.
Good morning, Debbie. Good morning, Harry.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you both.
Thank you.
I have two questions today, if you have the time.
We do.
First question, can a durable power of attorney be tailored to take effect only if I become incapacitated to the point where I can't handle... You know, like financial matters?
Theoretically, yes. Realistically, no.
Yeah,
there is. This thing is called, you want to do this one?
Yeah, it used to be called a springing power of attorney, and it didn't spring into action until you were incapacitated. The problem was that the language in the power of attorney said that it didn't spring into power, you know, they couldn't act until you were incapacitated, and then the language in the power of attorney said that you had to have doctors that said you were actually incapacitated. The situation I've had in the past, and we don't even do these anymore.
We advise against doing
right.
them because we may never be able to trigger the effectiveness of the POA.
I've had people that were basically on life support, and the doctors wouldn't sign off that they were incapacitated, so the person couldn't act. And that's exactly when you want the person to be able to act is when you can't act. So it's very, very difficult. And you really can't blame the doctors because today you're incapacitated. The person goes out and they clean out all your accounts, right? They sign off. And the next day the person's fine sitting in their bed going, hey, where's all my money?
Right.
Yeah, it's hard in this age of so much Alzheimer's and dementia. The legal definition of incapacity, frankly, is not the same as the medical definition of incapacity. And there are different legal definitions of capacity. There is testamentary capacity, which is the knowledge, the understanding you need to make a will. And then there's something else called contractual capacity, which is the capacity you need to sign a contract. And that's a higher level than you need to make a will, believe it or not. Okay? So,
all right.
And the medical community has different. So here's what happens. Doctors have been advised by their malpractice insurance carriers not to sign these things. Because if they sign a document that says, in my medical opinion, this person is no longer capable of exercising independent judgment and managing their financial affairs, and somebody, you know, absconds with your money, they could be liable and they, and somebody could sue them. So that's the hard thing. Now, I think you could do, I have to check this, but I think you could do a springing power of attorney that would allow someone other than your doctor to make that determination. Like your spouse, one of your children, or so-and-so, you know. And then the question becomes, do you really want to put those people, give them that authority? Right. Most people would probably say no.
So the option is available, but it's one you would probably vote against.
Exactly.
Okay.
We won't be able to tell 20 years down the road if you're in the late stages of dementia. Mm-hmm. We aren't able to predict whether a doctor will sign a piece of paper that says that.
Okay.
And if they don't, then your power of attorney is absolutely powerless to do anything. And the alternative at that point is going to be, we're going to have to institute a guardianship proceeding in court and have someone appointed to be your guardian of your financial affairs and your personal affairs. And that's, you know, I mean, what does a power of attorney cost? A couple $100, all right?
Yeah.
And a guardianship proceeding is probably going to cost minimally $10,000 to $15,000, assuming it's uncontested, because there's a whole. So, you know, that's the dilemma we have here.
Okay, well, I appreciate your comments on that. And my second question, as a courtesy to other callers, do you have anyone waiting?
We do, yes.
Okay, I'll call it another session and pose my other question.
Okay, all right.
Thank you very much.
All right,
thank you.
Thanks,
have a
Russell.
Great weekend.
Take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
Take care. Okay, we got, who's next? Bill in Poughkeepsie. Hey,
good morning, Bill.
Good morning, how are you?
Happy New Year. We are.
You too.
Pretty good, thanks.
Frequently on your show, you talk about periodically one should sit down and review their health care proxy, power of attorney, their will, even their Medicaid trust.
Hang on.
Uh-oh. Call back, Bill, if we lost you. Sorry. No,
we didn't. I just put two lines on at the same time, so Bill just has to be patient here.
Hang on, okay. Bill.
Bill, are you there?
I'm here.
I'm sorry about that. I put both of you on at the same time. Apologize.
Okay, sorry.
Go right ahead.
All right.
Okay. So frequently on your show, you've talked about sitting down with your law firm and basically going over your health care proxy,
yes,
power of attorney, will, Medicaid trust, which I have with you already, okay? And what I'm concerned about is, what types of questions should I bring to the table when I meet, and or what should I expect to hear from you in regarding the review?
Well, I want to update you. I mean, generally we advise people to do this at least every 5 years, okay? And more frequently, if you have a major event in your life, you know, you get married, you get divorced, someone dies, someone becomes incapacitated. You have a serious medical diagnosis that could result either in your death or placement in a long-term care facility like a nursing home. Those are the kind. You have a sudden, you know, your aunt dies and leaves you $1 million. We may want to look at how that affects the estate plan we did for you 5 years ago and whether we have to tweak it a little bit and make some changes to it. People... life happens, as they say.
It does.
And people's relationships change with spouses, with children. The person that you named your son executor of your estate, he has now moved to Seattle, Washington, and it might be more convenient for your daughter, who lives in Poughkeepsie, to be the executor now rather than your son, who's all the way across the country. Those are the kinds of things we look at, we talk about. We're also going to talk to you about things that have changed in the law since you did your documents. You know, the estate tax levels changed. For instance, I'm not going to get into this right now, but there is a major change that went into effect January 1st that's going to affect everyone who has an IRA. The government has essentially passed what I think is probably the worst consumer law in decades. They have destroyed one of the most important income tax planning devices that we use for IRAs in the country. Okay, it's called the Secure Act, and you ought to start reading about it, because we're going to be talking about this a lot this year. And anyone who has IRAs who's done planning, here's what they've done. Unless you're a spouse or a minor or disabled child, your family can no longer do a stretch IRA with the inherited IRA they get from you when you die. Okay? It's out the window. Gone.
We just posted on Facebook about that.
Regarding that.
Yeah, what? What's that?
My accountant called me Thursday specifically regarding that.
Yeah, and we got to, you know, we're going to do some massive planning this year for people who have thought, well, this is going to really affect people who are in second marriages. I've already run into this, where we want to provide, well, it's not so much in a marriage, because a spouse can do a stretch. A spouse can do a rollover and still do a stretch. Now when it goes to your kids, guess what? They got to cash it out in no more than 10 years.
Correct.
So if there's $500,000 left in your IRA, guess what? Your kid's going to have to take $50,000 a year out over 10 years. And if they're working, making $100,000, all of a sudden they're going to have an extra $50,000 of taxable income. Okay? In exchange for that, guess what? They're going to let you keep your IRA till you're 72 instead of 70 and a half. So whoopee-doo. You're going to get an extra 18 months of tax-deferred earnings. Wow. That's the trade-off, okay? And the rest of it I won't even get into right now because, you know, this is a bill that was principally designed to secure the insurance and annuity industry, not consumers, but is being pushed out as this wonderful consumer deal as a bunch of baloney.
Harry feels very strongly about this.
It is the greed of government. You know, the greed of government. Here, the theory is they want to force the liquidation of an IRA over 10 years instead of 15, 20, or 25 years, whatever your kid's life expectancy is. They're going to force the liquidation of that IRA so they can collect the tax in 10 years. And guess what? It applies to Roths as well, which are non-taxable. When your kid inherits your Roth, even though it's non-taxable, they're going to force them to liquidate that in 10 years. Even though when your kid takes it out in 10 years, it's not taxable because guess what? They want to force the liquidation of the non-taxable asset, cash it out, so you go ahead and buy a taxable investment like a stock or a bond or a bank account or that's going to generate more taxes for the government.
Amazing.
Uncle is always in your pocket. You know, he's not in your pocket for estate tax reasons anymore because you got to have almost $12 million before the estate tax. But believe me, the amount of IRA money that's laying out there far exceeds what the government was collecting in estate taxes, let me tell you. And it's all taxes, ordinary income. So I'll get off my pulpit now and get off my soapbox.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks
for
listening.
Have a good day now.
Take care.
All right, where can you hear the words whoopee-doo, but only here on the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Show?
We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
Whoopie-doo!
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Okay, we are back, and welcome back. I'm Harry Miller.
I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We are in Albany, Saratoga, Kingston, and now Clifton Park.
Yeah.
So welcome back. We'd love to hear your calls. We had actually a really busy first half hour this morning. 518-476-5900. That's our number here in the studio. If you're outside the local calling area, you can reach us at 1-800-WROW-590.
So I was telling Harry during the break, we actually just had a post. Herzog has its own Facebook page. So if you're on Facebook, you can go into the Herzog Law Firm's Facebook And we just posted an article on the Secure Act. And we just posted an article about the increase in Social Security, too. So there's a couple of really good articles on Facebook under the Herzog Law Firm. And you can go on Facebook, and then you just go to the little search thing at the top, and you can put in Herzog Law Firm, and it'll take you right to our page.
Cool. Cool. Yeah, we're going to be doing some seminars in the coming year about the Secure Act, because it's really going to require a re-review of a lot of folks who have structured the beneficiaries of their IRAs and 401ks in a manner that's going to provide a longer income stream than 10 years for people. And the other thing you have to keep in mind, I don't want to get too technical here, but this 10-year rule does not replace the old 5-year rule. There used to be a 5-year drawdown for a distribution to someone who is not a designated beneficiary. Well, guess what? That hasn't gone away. They've layered the 10 years on top of the 5 years. So you still have to have a designated beneficiary to take advantage of the 10-year rule. Otherwise, you could be stuck back with the 5-year rule because that's not gone away.
Well, and you don't want to make your estate the beneficiary of your IRA.
Because it's not a designated beneficiary. Exactly. And they're going to have to cash out in 5 years instead of 10.
So,
wow.
There's a lot of things you've got to think about. And there's been a lot of changes, too.
Yeah, and frankly, we're just learning about ourselves because this just became the law 3 days ago on January 1st. So, you know, what it's going to require, but this is going to require analysis and advice from someone who understands tax law, like tax lawyers or accountants, Russell's back on the line. Hey, Russell, we got time to talk to you about your second question. Good morning.
Hi, Russell.
Good morning. Well, my reason for my callback is my second question concerns the topic you're discussing at the moment, and that is the Secure Act and the IRA beneficiaries.
Great.
So I thought I'd give you a call back while your soapbox is still hot.
Segued nicely.
So what's your question?
Shoot.
So the question is, Harry, my understanding from what I've read through on the Secure Act is the 10-year period does not apply to a non-spouse sibling who is no more than 10 years younger than the account owner.
Yeah, that's correct.
So holding that to be true, currently my IRA is set up. I have two older siblings and one younger. The younger is less than 10 years younger than myself.
Right.
So my thought is, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, we are all still working. And as you mentioned, the 10-year period would certainly affect their incomes, which would affect their tax brackets.
Right.
If I were to change the beneficiaries to just my younger sibling, and then if something should happen to me, they could then extend the beneficiary payouts over the course of, and again, this is my understanding, her lifetime.
Yeah, assuming it's more than 10 years, yeah.
Yes.
If it's less than 10 years, it depends how old your sister is and how old you are, but yeah, it could, yes, that's correct.
Just for the benefit of, number one, the withdrawals would be less.
Yes.
I would leave directions with her to spread it out amongst her and my other siblings, and hopefully that would address the possible problem concerning, you know, the extra income for all of them.
Yes. Yes. You could do that. Yeah. We have to run the numbers and see that there was enough difference and enough tax savings to make it worthwhile, because it could be quite complicated. The other thing you could do, we can still use see-through trusts. We're still going to have to use see-through trusts for some types of beneficiaries like children and things like that. But yeah, so we're still planning this all out. But yeah, you and I ought to get together at some point and talk about this, you know, over the course of the winter, perhaps, all right?
Seminars and
yeah,
perhaps
exactly.
Once I read a little bit more about this, perhaps define the question a little more. But
yeah, I mean, it's too much to do on the radio,
your
frankly.
Your thoughts on the subject.
Yeah, it is. And then, you know, the other thing is kids. Yeah, minors, if an IRA is inherited by a minor child, Now, the minor child can do life expectancy until they reach the age of majority, which is 18 in this state. And then when they hit 18, at the point they have to hit 18, now they have to cash it out within 10 years, which is between 18 and 28. Now, if there's a couple hundred thousand in that IRA for that 18-year-old kid, that's a dangerous time to push out that kind of money to an 18 to 28-year-old kid. So we're going to be using some trust vehicles that will qualify to receive that money. So it gets a little complicated, and that's enough radio stuff probably on this subject for this morning. Okay. Yes. Okay?
Thanks, Russell. Thank you both, and have a good day.
Take care. Thank you, too. But I did want to mention that when you leave an IRA to a minor, they have to have a guardian appointed for them. Whether or not they have parents or not, you still have to have a guardian appointed. So their parent would probably be appointed the guardian if their parents are still alive. But there's another hoop to jump through. So if you're using the IRA trust, which basically is just a revocable trust that kind of just sits there until the IRA gets paid out, then the money could go over there. They wouldn't have to appoint a guardian. And then you could kind of...
The trustee could handle it.
Right, yes. The trustee could handle it. Because it sounds silly. I mean, it's not like the guardianship that Harry was talking about earlier with the lack of power of attorney. I mean, it's probably not going to cost you 10 grand. But it is going to cost you because everything will have to be filed with the court. And
well, you could do, what, an Article 17A? Or, no, that's just for disabled.
That's disabled. Yeah,
okay, well,
so,
whatever.
But, you know, it's not as... Mm-hmm. It's not as impactful as a regular guardianship, but you still have to have a guardian appointed because I've had people that have left them, you know, grandma and grandpa that they thought that they were doing these great things by leaving a 3-year-old an IRA, and then their parents have to petition for guardianship to be able to take care
to
of
take
the
care
money.
Of the money. Yeah. Now, you have to understand also what we're talking about, folks, here is only people with fairly large IRAs, you know. I mean, if you have a $100,000 IRA that someone inherits, they got to push it out 10 grand a year over 10 years. It's not that big a deal, okay? We're talking about IRAs, but, you know, I mean, some people have several million dollars in their IRAs. You know, I have a client I've been talking to this right now who's about close to $3 million in an IRA and wanted to make arrangements to have, he is in a domestic partner relationship and is not married to the woman he's lived with for 25 years. But he wanted to provide a life income stream for her when he died. Well, guess what? He can't anymore. Because if he has a $3 million IRA, if she takes 100 grand a year out, at the end of 9 years, she's taken out 900,000. Now in the 10th year, you got to push out $2.1 million, and somebody's got to pay tax on that.
It's a lot of money.
So, you know, this is making IRAs very, very complicated, and the distribution scheme is not going to be easy. So, you know, we're going to help you through these things, and... But we're all getting the lay of the land ourselves right now. So,
yeah, one of my clients.
But you're going to need really tax advisors, not, you know.
True.
I mean, financial advisors, I'm sorry, they're good at advising about financial stuff, but they don't know anything about tax. All right. You're going to need accountants and lawyers to help you through this complicated tax process.
True. I have a client right now that we're working on their estate plan, and they were trying to figure out how to equal everything up. They have a son, and the son has two kids, and the kids are in their 20s.
Right.
So they were looking at what assets they wanted to give him and what assets they wanted to give the grandkids. And so we started looking at the assets that they have. The financial planner was on the phone with us. And he said, you know, it made more sense because theoretically the kids are going to be in a lower tax bracket. The grandkids are going to be in a lower tax bracket than their father's going to be. So they were thinking about giving their father the cash assets, the house, the money and the stocks and bonds, and then they had some money, probably about $700,000 in this one IRA, and splitting that equally between the two kids so that they would get that money. And then the financial person was like, you really want to give 20-year-olds that money? And they said, well, no, not really. So we're going to set up an IRA trust that the money's going to go into. So hopefully they're in a lower tax bracket when they have to take the distributions, but the trust will protect them from saying, woohoo, I'm going to cash out I'm going to cash out this $375,000.
Go fit me to myself a Ferrari.
That's right. You know, and that's the thing. At 20 years old, you're trying to impress the friends that you have in college, and you're like, let's all go riding in the car.
Okay. Well, that's fun. Okay, 476-5900 is our number. It's not our name. It's our number here. Our name is the Herzog Clifford Harry and Debbie Show. So don't forget the 518. what is it, 40? Yeah, we got a lot of time. 518-476-5900. You got a question. Hey, good news. Listen, I do want to bring something. It is the first of the year, and people are going to start getting their 1099s in from your banks and your brokerage firms and your mutual fund companies and everybody else and all that stuff. So guess what? If you're 65 or over, the IRS has designed a new 1040 for you to use. It's called the 1040SR for seniors.
Oh, my gosh.
No, listen, you know, I think this is a good thing. It's only 2 pages long, and it's designed for people who are senior citizens for the kind of income they have.
Mm-hmm.
Pension, Social Security, dividends, interest, capital gains, and it's a simple 2-page form, all right? Now, if you have capital gains, you still have to attach Schedule D, but and you know what? It's in a little larger type than the old 1040. So check it out. You can go on, if you go on the IRS's website and just type in, you go to where it says forms and instructions and type in the search box 1040SR, it'll bring up the form. It's 2 pages long, and you can start using it this year. It's for 2019. So see if it's available for you to use. Now, you can't use it if you itemize deductions, okay? But most seniors don't itemize deductions.
No, they take the standard deduction.
Because unless you have more than $24,000 of itemized deductions, you're better off taking the standard deduction, right?
True.
So, you know, most seniors don't have a huge mortgage on their house, their property taxes, they're getting the STAR relief and everything. So the average family over 65 is using the standard deduction. And it may work for a lot of you out there, all right?
Yeah, a couple of things I wanted to mention. If you are our client and you have one of our irrevocable grantor trusts, you can call Stacy and get on the list to get the instructions for the 1041 for the trust. Obviously, we don't have those together yet because a lot of times the forms aren't out yet on the IRS website. But
Jane Marie's working on them. But
she is.
They'll be out by probably middle of February.
So if you want to call Stacy at the office at 518-465-7581, that's 518-465-7581. She's at extension 126. She can get you on the list, and then as soon as we have the forms ready, we'll mail them out to you. We do that every year so that our clients kind of know how to fill out the 1041. And on it says, if you have this, then you should probably hire a tax preparer because it's fairly simple if you don't have any complex assets. But if you do...
If your income, which most of our clients consists of interest on, you know, interest, dividends, and long or short-term capital gains, you probably could fill this form out yourself.
Right.
If you have a complicated return, if you have income from partnerships or rental real estate or international investments, then you probably already have an accountant doing your taxes anyway. So you don't have to worry about that. But, you know, between our 1041, which is the form for the trust, and the new 1040SR, some people may actually be able to do their own tax returns again.
That's true.
Maybe you'll save you a couple $100 and go into the, you know, H&R Block or whoever your favorite tax preparer is. We all have them, but, you know, maybe you can save a little bit of money.
And going back to the STAR exemption, so... If you currently receive the STAR exemption, you can choose to register for STAR credit to receive a check instead. You may receive a greater benefit, and your savings will never be less than the STAR exemption benefits. So due to recent changes in the law beginning in 2019, the value of the STAR credit savings may increase by as much as 2% each year. So if you decide to get the check, you could get up to like a 2% increase each year, not guaranteed. But the value of the STAR exemption, meaning the amount they're going to give you a credit on your taxes, cannot increase. So basically, if you had, say you had a $200 exemption on your taxes, it's always going to be $200.
Right.
But if you opted to take the $200 check, then it could increase as much as 2% every year.
The 2% tax cap, which goes up every year. The people who sign up for the new program get it. The people who stay in the old program, I think, don't get it. Yeah,
so what I did, I just Googled it, and it's on the New York State Department of Taxation and Finance, and it has little click-throughs where you can update your registration if you want to get the check.
Have you ever tried doing that?
I registered for my STAR exemption online.
Yeah, I tried to. It didn't work out, so. I'm computer challenged, however.
So, and then it talks about differences, too. It talks about if your income is greater than $250,000 and less than $500,000, there's a different registration. So, if you have questions.
Most of our listeners think it's probably less than $500,000.
Right, so you can go on the website and look at it. If it's something that you don't understand, then I'm sure that if you give us a call, we could kind of help you walk through it. But that's the difference on the STAR exemption. So if you're getting the check, it could increase up to 2% every year. If you aren't getting the check, if you just have the credit on your taxes, then it's going to always be the same. Right. Unless you go for enhanced STAR.
Right. And well, the enhanced STAR, which most of our clients and listeners probably have, is over 65. And I think the income level is, what, 90,000? It's pretty high. It's the high 80s, low. It's in the high 80s or low 90s. It's very high. So a lot of them will get that exemption. And if you bought another house, you got to sign up for the new house. It doesn't automatically carry over from your old house to the new house. You got to re-enroll if you've changed houses in the last, since the last time you had the STAR exemption. The other thing we got, I got this nice email from Debbie yesterday. Announcing what the new federal New York State estate tax limits are. So those of you who are concerned about estate taxes now, the federal estate and gift tax exemption has gone up to $11.58 million per person. So we'll round that up to 11.6. So you can now pass another $200,000 tax-free to your kids. And if you're married, you could pass $23 million tax-free. Nice, huh?
Yeah, nice.
And in New York State, the exemption amount this year is $5,850,000. So you have to have more than $6 million before New York State's going to tax your estate. Pretty good.
The thing you got to think about, and I'm facing this situation with one of my clients right now, is her husband passed, and even if she takes all of his assets, there wouldn't be any tax for estate tax in New York. Close. But she's talking about moving to Massachusetts after she retires, and Massachusetts is still a million, right?
Right, and New Jersey, I think, is like 850,000. I mean, right. there are other states that are even worse than New York.
Yes.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Pennsylvania has inheritance tax.
My mother lived in Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania taxes every dollar that you have. Now, if it's passing to a spouse, there's no tax. If it's going to kids, when my mother died, it's a flat 4.5% of everything. There's no $5.8 million threshold before they start taxing you. And I have a client who recently moved to Pennsylvania from New York because he's widowed. He has no children. And he has a nephew down there who's taking care of him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If it's going to a nephew, it's 15%.
Yeah, it gets larger as it goes out, right?
Yeah, this guy has, more than a few bucks. So
it may work for you now when you're doing your estate planning, but you got to think about these things. Because like I said, if she does retire and move to Massachusetts and then she passes away, let's just say that she was exempt because of the $5 million or $6 million is going to be in New York almost.
Yeah.
She moves to Massachusetts, she passes away. It's going to be taxed anything above a million.
There were Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and I think Maryland. Are the worst estate tax states you could possibly live in. I mean, there are 37 states who don't have an estate tax, largely in the South and in the West, Southwest, so you got a lot of choices here, but not to knock Massachusetts. I love the Cape.
The Cape is nice, yes.
But I think I just have a summer house there, not a year-round residence.
Yeah, it's difficult. And that's the thing, when we sit down with people, because kind of one of the questions was earlier, whenever he said, if you do the five-year review, what kind of questions do we ask people? And it just depends on how old you are, what your situation is. Are you retired? Are you planning on staying here? Are you going to move someplace else? There's a lot of different questions that people don't even think about. What's happened with your kids?
Right.
I have a lot of clients right now that named each other, like husband, wife named each other as powers of attorney. And now they're aging out and they've got the kids as the secondary. And right. a lot of them are coming in and moving the kids up to the first position because they don't want to have a situation where one of them becomes incapacitated and they're named as their power of attorney and then they have to resign.
I had a brother and sister in the office and it was the exact same situation. dad is currently in rehab. Mom's okay, but she's, you know, she's
old.
And they're each other's power of attorney. So we're simply going to have them relinquish their appointment in favor of the two children who are next in line. And it's real simple to do. Because now what's happening is we're going to do a home care application for dad. And he, in the meantime, because it takes you know, several months for that to be put in place.
Right.
In the meantime, they have to get some private home care. And so they're going to have to move some money and start paying for private home care services. And, you know, dad's bank account's just in his name. So right now, it's kind of hard to move the money. So we're getting all that fixed up for the family. And, you know, they're very pleased.
Well, you know, we got a call this week from one of our clients. And she and her husband were both in Saratoga Hospital.
Right.
So what had happened was he had fallen. And so she called 911. They took him to the hospital. And then later on in the afternoon, she got ill. Called 911. They took her to the hospital. Come to find out, they both had the flu.
That's a serious problem if you're older.
So they both had the flu, but because he fell, she's been in Saratoga Hospital. She just got out yesterday. She's been in there 9 days. Mm-hmm. And so they're sending him out to rehab because he fell.
Right.
But she's going home, and she's not okay. I mean, she had the flu. She's been in a hospital for 9 days. You debilitate. You know, you're laying there in bed. You're not up. You're not moving around. And so we're trying to figure out, Kim's working with her to try to get her some help at home. Mm-hmm. And right now he's only going for rehab, but we don't really know what his situation is going to progress. So here's something that just all of a sudden, boom, just happened one afternoon. Probably everything was kind of triggered by the flu, but you never know.
This is why you need to have a backup on your healthcare proxy, too.
Right.
If you have a healthcare proxy where the spouses just appoint each other and there's no backup, that's a bad healthcare proxy. Because if you both wind up in a hospital, who's going to make decisions for you? You know, you need somebody there to help you with those things. It's really important to think about those things. And that's why, you know, one of your New Year's resolutions this year ought to be, come on in and see us and get all this stuff straightened out. Okay? It's really important. And it's not hard. It's not hard. But we have the opportunity to sit down and talk to you. And we're pretty good at this. We've been doing this a long time. We're pretty good at it. And I think we know the kinds of things to talk about and the kinds of questions to ask you. And frankly, some of them may be a little uncomfortable, you know, because when you come in and talk to Debbie and I or Dave or Jay Murray, we kind of got to find all those skeletons in your closet that nobody wants to talk about. You know, we got to know if your daughter's in a bad marriage, if your son or grandson's got some kind of a substance abuse problem or whatever, because if we don't know that stuff, even though we're hopeful that we can solve those problems, we can't really design the best estate plan that's going to let you sleep comfortably at night. And our goal is to give you, you know, peace of mind so you're not laying awake worrying about everything. And, you know, so come on in. This, you know, it's actually a pretty mild January, you know.
It's nice.
So far.
I like it.
Knock on wood. But, you know, I can't complain about the weather since the first of the year. Even though it's raining today, you know, beats snow for me.
Of course, when I was home in Missouri for Christmas, it was 70.
Well, see, you're further south. You know, Missouri's really
Midwest.
Almost a southern state, though. It's a southern Midwest.
Yeah, my niece and I went to the store. She needed boots. She's up in North Dakota.
Yeah.
She's doing her grad work
in Fargo or someplace like that.
She's doing her grad work in North Dakota. She's like, I need these boots. So we went to the shoe store and she was looking at boots. And then I was on the clearance rack. I mean, it's 70 degrees out. I didn't bring flip flops. And I'm like, ooh. So she and I both bought sandals instead of buying boots. We both bought sandals instead of boots. So.
And did you have our friend? My wife and I have friends over in Boston, and they have a house down on Cape Cod. And Rhea and two of her friends, there's a photograph hanging in their house of the three women with their feet in sandals, and it's just the 3 feet, and so you have to guess whose foot is which foot. there's Patty and Rhea, and I forget the other one, and of course the sandals are all different colors. It's a really funny picture.
Well, that's cool. That's what we should have done.
Yeah. Well, next time.
Next time.
Take a cell phone picture of your feet and then say, guess which foot is Debbie's and which one is Sherry's and which one is whoever else is in the... Three is very nice. You know, three is a nice...
Yeah, it's a nice
visually,
number.
It's a nice pattern. Yeah. Anyway. So, once again, don't forget, we got these seminars coming up in January, 22?
21st,
21, 22, and 23.
Yep.
It's only about 2.5 weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
On the 21st at 2 o'clock, Clifton Park, Hampton Inn. 22nd, also at 2 o'clock, Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Avenue in Albany, across from SUNY. The 23rd, the day after, 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock. 10 o'clock, we're going to be in Albany on Wolf Road at the Courtyard by Marriott Residence Inn. That's the brand new hotel, right? On the Times Union end of route, you know.
Yes, it's over there behind Pioneer Bank.
That place just opened. Brand new hotel. So that'll be a neat place. And then the same day, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we'll be in Schenectady at the Courtyard by Marriott Mohawk Harbor. Wow. I don't think I've ever been there either.
Yes, one over by the casino.
Aha. And Ms. Verney will be, Attorney Verney will be your host that afternoon.
I believe you can walk right from that into the casino.
Well, so. It's a little ways.
But it's close
it's
enough.
It's walkable, yes.
Yeah, it's close
it's
enough.
It's totally walkable, yeah.
I must tell you, I have never been to the casino yet.
The Rivers Casino?
Any of them. Or the one at
Saratoga?
Saratoga, no, I don't.
Well, you are missing out on a lot.
Really? That's not much of a casino gambling. I don't know.
We'd be more than happy to take some of your money and gamble it for you.
Yes, we would. Ben and I would be happy to do that.
We would do that for you.
See, that might be a good thing for me, because every time I've gone to a casino, and I've been to a few over the years, I always lose the money. It's gone. You know, it's gone in an hour.
I'm sure Ben and I would win.
I'm sure we would as well.
Hey, have a great weekend.
Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.